This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. Had a good week this week. I actually would have turning on the air conditioning because it is a little warm. It's summer after all. It's funny because I one of the guys I work with was being very kind because I had just called my mom just a few minutes ago. And I was getting my thing all set up in here, and I just looked and realized that I had left my recorder on the roof of my car, and I was talking to my mom at the same time. And about that time, I looked over, and one of my fellow programmers had gotten out of his car, and he was running over waving at me because he was afraid I was going to drive off with my recorder on top of my car. And I went, "No, I got it." He went, "Okay, good. Thank you." So I work with good people. I work with good people. They're just kind, and they're talented, and man, I have been blessed. I was also blessed today because I had breakfast with my buddy that I have breakfast with once a month, and we just had just a lovely, lovely breakfast together. We talked about a bunch of stuff. They usually end up being long breakfasts, which is just fine, so I think we chatted for whole lands an hour and 45 minutes, I think, before it was all said and done. But just talked about a wide variety of topics, and I really enjoyed the time, and he seemed to enjoy the time. There is a car wreck here. So we're going to wander our way through. Yeah, looks like there is a car wreck. Wow, I'm hoping that I can get through. One moment. Well, a little navigation I need to do here. Somebody did buckle the front of their car. Anyways, okay. So, had a really nice breakfast. I actually didn't. I was kind of hoping before I went to this breakfast that I was going to talk about some of the stuff that I'm going to talk about in the podcast. We just touched on it a little bit, but because I hadn't had a chance to kind of run some of this stuff by my friends this week. My buddy that I usually, well, I did get together with the guy I normally get together with on Friday, but we talked about something else. And the people I get together with on Saturday, the young couple, we talked about something else. And I didn't actually see the TED Talk that I'm going to chat about until like Tuesday. And the buddy I usually get together with on Tuesday, he was camping with his family. And my Wednesday buddy is moving into a new house. And today's Thursday. And I have a Thursday breakfast, but we had so much stuff that we were talking about this morning that we didn't actually end up discussing this. But it's pretty interesting. I think we'll be fine. Anyways, the writing is going well. It's really interesting to, writing is just the most fascinating thing because there's a guy pedaling his bike here and, whoa, there, buddy, don't come over. Okay, writing is just the most fascinating thing because it's been going along really well. And so I hit a particular chapter where I thought, oh, yeah, okay, all I have to do in this chapter to get this done is just X, you know, just gather together some of the sayings that Jesus has in other parts. We'll put it together into a big speech. Ta-da-da. We'll just kind of paraphrase it a little bit, tweak it a little bit. It will be fine. So I started into that, and this was like last Thursday I started into that. And Thursday or Friday, and I worked on it, and I kind of went, oh, no, that's not okay, let's do some research. So then I started doing some research, and I think it was Saturday rolled around, still doing research, really didn't have it, you know, I didn't have the thing, whatever the thing was supposed to be that I was supposed to do. And so then on Sunday, I kept doing some more research, went back and rewrote a few things, but I'm still like staring at this section going, yeah, okay, this is not yet, it's not yet. Then Monday, I spent the evening doing research, looking at it, still nothing, I don't have it. Tuesday, I don't have it, and I'm just blank, you know, it's like, this isn't the direction. I'm just trying to find what that thing is, you know? And all of a sudden, I start writing an introduction of what Jesus is saying. I think I should just back up and just write the opening comments and maybe it'll just flow into that. So I start writing the opening comments and all of a sudden the thing just opens up. Oh, that's what I need to do there. And now it just seems obvious that that's what I need to do there. But it was like 3 days of just pawing at the air and having nothing before it finally went tink. Hey, there it is. Writing. So interesting. So very interesting. Have heard back from a few more beta readers on part 4 of Grumpy Old Prophets, getting some positive comments, and people seem to be enjoying it. So that's all good. I'm really hoping that by about September 1st, I'm going to have part 5 under control. If I can get part 5 under control by September 1st, then I should be in good shape to have everything uploaded and ready to go for the Christmas season. So we'll see how all that goes. Anyways, this week, I've still been chewing on what I talked about last week, and specifically this idea of numbing that Brené Brown talked in her TED Talk, her second TED Talk, about how we numb ourselves so that we don't have to endure the vulnerabilities of life. We distract ourselves so that we don't have to endure shame. And I've been thinking about that. Been thinking about that idea of numbing. In conjunction with that, I had a friend who reposted a blog post on Facebook talking about the new mommy porn genre of 50 Shades of Grey and Magic Mike. And I've discussed this with some friends and specifically some young mothers, and you know, I told them I actually picked up the sample of 50 Shades of Grey and started reading through it, but I didn't think it was written that well, and it was pretty obvious where it was going, and I didn't feel like I could learn necessarily anything from this, and so I just gave up after I hit the end of the sample. This particular young mother I was talking to had read it. She didn't think it was really that well written. You know, and we got on the subject of Magic Mike, which is the movie about the male strippers. And we kind of talked about that. Well, then I had seen this blog post. And I was reading through this blog post, and it was written from a Christian perspective about how young, good Christian women shouldn't be reading this kind of stuff, shouldn't be looking at this kind of stuff. And, you know, I kept thinking about this business of numbing, and also thinking about just taking a step back from these things and realizing that, you know, these things are created by human beings. And they're created by human beings who are trying to make a living, and they're created by human beings who are trying to represent something. And I was just thinking about, okay, where is the line of demarcation here? Where is the point where we should run screaming for the hills? Because there is stuff, frankly, that I've watched that for some people would say, oh, you shouldn't even watch that. I mean, we have all kinds of people, if you want to talk about, well, the line should be the appearance of evil. Well, okay, well, where people put that line is extremely varied. And I can remember, I'm old enough, I can remember the old days when people thought the television was the devil's eye and you should just not even have that in your house to begin with. And we certainly have come a long way. And I think some of this is the whole idea of what are we offended at? And when we look at these things, do we allow them to drag us someplace that we shouldn't be? Or do we look at it and say, okay, well, this is just a story someone has put together. And maybe it's got a couple of interesting spots in it, but ultimately, what this person puts out there for me to look at, how it affects me, is based on me. In truth, it's not based on the images. It's not based on the writing. It's based on me. And what am I trying to accomplish by consuming that? And I was thinking about that all in the context of numbing as well. And then I came across a TED Talk by Jane McGonigal this week. It's her second TED Talk, I think. And I actually commented on her first one because it was very interesting. And this one was interesting as well. And she was talking about gaming and the reaction that people had to her first talk on gaming, because she proposed that everybody should play more games in her first TED Talk. And she said the most common response that she got from that TED Talk was that people were a bit aghast that she would suggest that others sit around and play games, because playing games were a colossal waste of time. That no one was going on their deathbed to say, boy, I wish I had played more Angry Birds. So again, this was kind of in that whole genre set of what we consume and why we consume things, and how we are using what we consumed. And so I started thinking about all that as well. And in the process of going through her TED Talk, there were some pretty interesting things that she said, not necessarily about gaming, but about our perspective on how we're living our lives. So I thought I'd just kind of wander through her TED Talk and then make some commentary along the way, and then maybe try to kind of revisit this idea of numbing at the end of it, and maybe we can see something in all of this. So as I said, Jane McGonigal, her last name is McGonigal, in case you'd like to look up her TED Talk. It's a good TED Talk. I think you would enjoy it if you watched it. She was talking about gaming and the reaction that people have had to her TED Talk that everybody should be gaming more. And part of that reaction came from a part of her answering that reaction was to say, okay, well, if the supposition is that no one on their deathbed is going to be saying, I wish I had played Angry Birds more, why don't we go and do some research and see what people really are regretful about? And this was interesting. These were the things that people said they regretted on their deathbed. I wish I hadn't worked so hard. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. I wish I had let myself be happier. I wish I'd had the courage to express my true self. I wish I'd lived a life true to my dreams instead of what others expected of me. Now, I think the first thing that we have to recognize with these deathbed regrets is that some of it may be skewed. Because when you're on your deathbed, if you ascribe to the fact that there is a framework of flesh and spirit and that we are all at war with ourselves, you can pretty much count on your fact, on the fact that when you're on your deathbed, the flesh is going to be pulling out all the stops and saying, oh man, if you had just done this, everything would have been different. But the fact is, while we were alive, if it was going to be a good thing, the flesh was going to discourage you from doing that. For instance, I wish I hadn't worked so hard. Well, the whole time you're working hard, there's a couple of things going on. First of all, you are providing for your family, and that's a good thing. But if you let it get out of control, you're not providing the things that really are important for your family, i.e. your time and your presence in their lives. And so while it is good to provide for your family, the flesh is also going to be actively pushing you to be distracted and away from your family. And then when you are, at the end, it's going to make you regret it. So there's that kind of stuff that's going on. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. Well, yeah, because being in touch with your friends actually makes you stronger. And so, of course, the flesh is going to try to pull you away from that. I wish I had let myself be happier. Well, why weren't you happier? Because the flesh was focusing constantly on the things that were wrong in your life, as opposed to just seeing the good stuff and celebrating that in your life. I wish I had the courage to express my true self. Yeah, because the flesh plants fear in your heart and drives fear into you to keep you from that. And that's why you need to stand up to your flesh and get control of that and listen to your spirit, because listening to your spirit, you will begin to hear, yes, I can do these things, and you'll have more courage. I wish I'd lived a life true to my dreams instead of what others expected of me. Depends on what your dreams are. If your dreams are being inspired by the spirit, absolutely. If your dreams are being inspired by something that is unattainable and your flesh is simply trying to get you to go that direction so that you will fail and that it can crush you, then no, you don't want to live up to your dreams. But if you're honest with yourself, you can tell the difference. So yes, it would be wonderful if people lived up to their dreams. So in these things that she's noted, I see there is this constant interplay between some of its flesh, some of its spirit. Now what she did next was, she then turned around and said that she thinks that playing games can handle most of this stuff. For instance, playing games is kind of the antithesis of working so hard. And that would be better. Well, okay, it might be better unless you're playing so many games that you lose your job. Then that would be bad. And she said, you know, and games help us maintain contact with our friends. Social games do. Well, okay, they do in a way, but there's also a way that the social contact that you're getting out of games really is not quality contact. Because in a lot of these social games, like Draw Something, there's no requirement of any real-time interaction. In fact, the game is specifically designed so there's no requirements on when you do things. So someone else draws something and submits it to you, and you can get to it pretty much anytime you want to. And then you can sit there and stare at it for as long as you want to and peddle around. And if you decide you don't want to respond to it, you don't have to respond to it. Well, see, true social interaction makes some demands on our time. So while there is some interaction of spending time with friends, it's not what I would call high quality. She talks about, I wish I'd let myself be happier, and about the fact that playing games can be... she says, according to the research, that just 30 minutes of online gameplay a day was enough to create dramatic boosts in mood and long-term increases in happiness. It showed it was... online games can outperform pharmaceuticals for treating clinical anxiety and depression. And I believe that. Because if you get yourself distracted from that voice of the flesh that's just pounding away at you, you can actually accomplish some things just playing games. So, yeah, okay. I can see some of that. Hey. Oh, no. I thought I had actually gotten my new t-shirt that was coming in, but it's not. It's coffee for my wife, or coffee bars for my wife, I should say. I'm getting my mail, by the way. So that point is pretty interesting, that yes, online gameplay can help with depression. I wish I had had more courage to express my true self. And in this, she said, well, that's like avatars. And there's been studies that have shown that people who have a heroic avatar can get that, and that can help them be more heroic in life. Okay, well, maybe. But I'm not sold on that point. Because having a heroic avatar in a game is not the same thing as actually being heroic in life. But if it helps some people, great. I'm backing into my garage. And I am going to have to cut this short because my son-in-law and daughter are coming over fairly soon, and I'm going to go help videotape some rehearsals of Betty and the Baldwin, and I still have to get changed, and I have to do a few things here and there, so we're going to make this quick. Anyways, she said when it came to helping a person lead a life true to her dreams, she's not sure that gaming can help there, so she put a big question mark by that. Now, this is where it finally started getting interesting. She said, okay, well, who am I, just a game designer, to comment on deathbed? She said, well, I've never been on my deathbed. She said, but I have come through an experience that has put me face to face with death. And that is, she had a concussion, didn't heal properly, and she had then begun to spend day after day of pain in her head and headaches and constant headaches. And the doctor had taken her off all the things that might trigger any kind of a headache. And basically was all the stuff she enjoyed, running, designing, working, and you know, anything that caused any kind of stress at all. She just wasn't supposed to do it. And she said she actually was experiencing something that a lot of people with concussions, about one in three, I think she said, experience, and that is suicidal ideation. She says she started hearing voices in her head, i.e. the flesh, voices in her head about the fact that she should just give up, that she was never, I've rolled down the window because it's a little warm in the garage, that she was never going to get cured of this, that she was going to spend the rest of her life, she might as well just kill herself. And she said the voices got so prevalent in her head that she actually started fearing for her life. And it was at that point that she decided that she was going to turn this into a game. And I thought this was a really good idea, that she gave herself a secret identity, Jane the Concussion Slayer, that she recruited allies, that she called her twin sister, she talked to her husband, and she said, I want you to help me with this game. And then she said she made up power-ups in this game, that she got points every time she did a power-up, like she went and she hugged a pet for 10 minutes, or she just walked one time around her block, that gave her points. And she said as she started playing this game, she said even with something so simple, within just a couple of days, she said that fog of depression and anxiety went away. It just vanished. It felt like a miracle. Now, it wasn't a miracle cure for the headaches or the cognitive symptoms. That lasted for more than a year. It was the hardest year of my life by far. But even when I still had the symptoms, even while I was still in pain, I stopped suffering. And that's when my ears perked up, because there is a Hindu saying that I think is absolute truth. Pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. Because suffering is really your relationship to the pain and what voice you're listening to. And if you listen to the voice of your flesh, it's always going to be this way. Nothing is ever going to change. This is your life for now, and you might as well kill yourself. That's where suffering comes from. But just with this simple game she had created, adopt a secret identity, recruit your allies, get people you can talk to that will help you, battle the bad guys, activate your power-ups, that this helped her. And by, my interpretation would be, by doing this, she stopped listening to the voices of the flesh and started listening to the spirit. And she discovered what she later found was called post-traumatic growth. She said, we hear about post-traumatic syndromes, but some people have post-traumatic growth, that they actually come back stronger from the trauma than before they experienced the trauma. And she said, what's interesting is that when you look at the things that people say after they experience post-traumatic growth, they sound like the things that people say, they sound similarly connected to the people say they regret when they die. This is what they say. My priorities have changed. I'm not afraid to do what makes me happy. I feel closer to my friends and family. I understand myself better. I know who I really am now. I have a purpose and sense of meaning in my life. I'm better able to focus on my goals and my dreams. And I think that's because in order to have post-traumatic growth, you have to focus on spirit rather than flesh. And if you focus on spirit in your life, then you'll see those types of things happen. You will know yourself better. You will have better relationships with your friends. You will have the courage to pursue your dreams. And so as part of that, she was trying to say, well, what are the things, what are the pieces of this process that we can latch onto that will help us move towards this kind of growth? And I thought these four things were good. They're basically four areas. Physical, that when you engage in physical exercise, physical activities, that helps you move towards growth. They're emotional. Mental, that you exercise your mind, that you take on challenges with your mind, that you learn disciplines. Emotional is another one that she was saying there are studies done that show people the dramatic difference in people's lives when they have three positive thoughts for every negative thoughts. They make a conscious choice that they're going to dwell on the positive as opposed to the negative. That makes a tremendous difference. And social, that you have relationships. And, you know, I'm big on emotion, on social, on relationships, getting together, sharing your heart across the table, across a meal with somebody. It makes a tremendous difference in our lives. And she was saying that it's been shown that people who do all of this stuff, that they actually add about 10 years to their lives because it puts them in a better place. And they end their lives with less regrets. And then she concluded by saying, okay, and with that 10 extra years, you might even have enough time to play a few games. That's where she brought it around. Which, okay, that's fine. She's a game designer. She wants to look at the purpose on the game. Or she wants to look at what games can be used for. And I understand all that. And I think games can be very good. But the big question, to just kind of summarize all this for me, is, are we playing games to numb ourselves? Are we playing games to strengthen ourselves physically and mentally and emotionally and socially? Like getting out and playing basketball, I think that's a great thing. Getting out and playing touch football, I think that's a great thing. You know, are we playing games that are strategy games that you have to think about it? I think those are really cool when you're either playing them by yourself or with others. Are we playing games that help us and encourage us to think positively about things as opposed to thinking negatively, that strengthen us emotionally? And are we playing games that help us socially? I've mentioned this before, but there was a time where every Wednesday night I was hopping on the online boards for Halo to play Halo every single Wednesday night for hours. I was doing that. Why was I doing that? Because at that point, my son-in-law had some extra time. He was really good at Halo. I was not very good. I would hop on an hour and a half before him and practice and practice and practice so at least I could kind of hold my own and be a benefit to him when he came on and we were playing together. And it didn't matter that we were separated. We could talk to each other in real time, experience the same things in real time because that was a bonding experience for us. Now, as soon as he didn't have the time to do that anymore, and my getting online with Halo was nothing more than randomly getting paired with people I would never talk to again, I stopped playing Halo socially. Because those types of social interactions where I'm never going to talk to these people again, that was just a numbing experience. That wasn't an experience that was really making me stronger in life. And I think this idea of, are we just numbing ourselves or are we engaging in something that's actually building us up, can be applied across a wide variety of elements, including things like 50 Shades of Grey and Magic Mike and those types of things. And I think for the most part, the women who are partaking and consuming of things like 50 Shades of Grey and Magic Mike probably are just numbing themselves and distracting themselves from the life they had and then just pining for that life as opposed to actually trying to make their life better. Now, if you read 50 Shades of Grey and it gets you all turned on, and then you think, oh, I could do this with my husband, this is fine. And then that builds up your relationship with your husband. Okay, well, maybe it's not so bad then. This is Phil Ferrand, and I better quit there. And I have made it home.